So, you think you know about sex? About the business of sex here in Portland? Do you think the sex business is big here in our city? We mean big for a city of this size, and big compared to other places in the U.S. The question is surprisingly easy to answer.
Do you understand the boundaries between what's legal and what's not? Do you think that we have the right laws and that the people enforcing them are doing a good job? We know some things that may surprise you. Do you think that prostitution is harmful to women, maybe to society in general? Or could it be an economic opportunity for some women? We'll challenge your views, whatever they are. And what about porn? Is that a bad thing? Do you have data to support your views? Could porn be ethical and pro-feminist? How about the issues of race and transgender identity? Are people in those categories affected differently in this industry? And at the end of the day, where do you think we're going with the business of sex? Is the future just like the past, only longer? Or will it be different? We have an answer for that question that may surprise you. So hang on, listen up. Here's KABU's 10-part series about the sex industry in Portland, Oregon, 2017 and beyond.
We'll present 5 perspectives on the business of sex. First, the people of Portland, whom you'll hear in our second and third episodes, have a lot to say about how the sex business is happening here. Second, the regulators and law enforcers, the FBI, U.S. Department of Justice, and the Portland Police Bureau. Third, industry experts, 3 PhDs who give an academic view from ethnological perspectives on prostitution and porn. Fourth, social service providers, the nonprofits and other entities that try to help people in the industry. Fifth, sex workers, those who are employed in the industry in various ways here in Portland, from porn filmmaker to sex toy educator to stripper.
These are the voices you'll hear from time to time. Commissioner Brad Avakian, Bureau of Labor and Industry, works with real people who are employers and employees.
These are real people with real lives that are just trying to make it day to day.
Scott Caron, Assistant U.S. Attorney, U.S. Attorney's Office, puts traffickers and other types of sex criminals behind bars.
It is sometimes very hard to sit in a room and talk to a 15-year-old girl who's been trafficked. That being said, it's also very worthwhile and it's very fulfilling as a job, because I always tell people being a prosecutor, being a federal prosecutor, is the best job in the world, because ultimately our job is to do what's right.
Agent Denise Bean, Federal Bureau of Investigation, speaks of the subjugation of women in the business of sex.
Do you agree with the premise that as human beings, we should be able to buy sexual satisfaction, that we should be able to subjugate someone for our sexual satisfaction, whether they're paid or not? You know, is that where we want to be as a society? And I know that some people will come back and say, well, that's something that enables them to make a living or pay the rent. And, you know, I would argue that, well, maybe we should find something else. These are able, capable human beings. Maybe there's a better way.
Portland Police Bureau Officer Chris Lindsay and Undercover Agent A, on the front lines of enforcement, talk about getting women out of the life.
What we do in the Portland Police Bureau, we are not trying to put, you know, victims who have been trafficked in jail.
No.
We're not. That's not our goal. Our goal is to get those victims out of the life if they want to, and get them the help they need to come back into society and to hold the traffickers accountable. That is our main goal.
Dr. Catherine Hawken, author of the recent article, The Economics of Desire, talks about the sex trade moving online.
But the key thing, the most important thing perhaps of all, is that it's just taken the sex trade off the street. And because it's indoors, it's much safer, it's invisible, and it's much more civilized, and it's better for the women. Now, less than 10% of the sex trade is on the streets. In many countries, it's less than 5%.
Dr. Marina Della Giusta, an economist who has written extensively on the sex trade and trafficking, brings up the imbalance of power that's way bigger than the sex business.
You know, not all women are victims, and not all women are you know, free agents, and this is the difficulty with this. But then again, this applies to a lot of work where there is a very strong imbalance of power.
Dr. Shira Tarrant, writer and professor on porn, tells us we need more discussion on the subject.
I think it's really important that we're having these conversations even when there are no easy answers, or especially because there are no easy answers. It's an area of sexuality where people have been less inclined to talk about what's happening, and that means that people have questions and they're not feeling comfortable asking them or having the conversations. And especially in societies or neighborhoods or religions or families where there's sexual shame, that makes it even more difficult to grapple with pornography because access is ubiquitous. It's just so easy. And that means we need to have even more conversations, not fewer.
Crystal Kordowski and Annalisa Davis of Rahab's Sisters point out how women shift from being victims to becoming problems.
There's some point, and I haven't figured out what that is, there's some point in our culture where we stop thinking of women as having problems or being victims and victimized, and where they shift over and they are considered the problem.
Emma Christensen and Gwen Kalaszewski from Yes, Youth Ending Slavery, contend that slavery continues even now, and they ask, how many slaves do you own?
The average age for entering into sex trafficking is 12 years old. So if we talk to youth about it, then they will be more equipped to not only protect themselves and their peers, but also as they enter the workforce, potentially will advocate against human trafficking and have the tools to do so.
Honey LaFleur is a performance artist here in Portland, not a stripper.
As a burlesque performer, I personally don't consider myself a stripper. I know there are plenty of burlesque performers that also consider themselves strippers, but to me, stripping is a much harder job. They're smarter. They make more than burlesque performers.
Lily Campbell, soft-spoken porn film producer who makes feminist porn here in Portland and tries to depict what she calls authentic female sexuality.
I have an opportunity to showcase a healthy, positive, authentic portrayal of female sexuality. Yeah, and so I really want to use that.
Emery Jane, sex toy specialist and sex educator at Shebop, sees herself as a shame smasher.
And so I approach everything with kind of a shame smashing attitude and a lot of openness and acceptance. And humor. Humor is really important when you're teaching about sex because people get nervous. But if they're able to laugh a little bit or be entertained, it's a lot easier for them to take the information in.
Red Reed, escort and activist, speaking with her friend Fauna, a stripper, points out how, according to local law enforcement, all of us may be trafficking in what we thought were normal business dealings.
It depends on how you define trafficking. So they've conveniently defined it as anyone who accepts money from a sex worker. So technically, yes, my landlord, CVS, the grocery store, Amazon.com, Powell's. I have a lot of traffickers. I also traffic myself.
You'll hear these voices throughout this series. We hope you come to understand the different perspectives they bring and the common ground on which we all stand.
There's no single theme for this work. As the series evolves, here are the key issues we see. Is Portland a hub of sex trafficking, an industry in the Pacific Northwest, as some claimed a few years ago? Are lower income folks and people of color affected more adversely or just differently than other sectors of our society in this business? How is the sex industry changing in relation to internet, social media, and other aspects of our communications culture? What does the future hold for sex trade? Are there gaps and flaws in how we address sex industry issues? Should we be thinking about changes in laws and regulations?
Our subject is the sex industry, but our focus is on the people who are in this industry and those directly affected by it. Who are they? Where are they? Do we see them every day? Do we know them? In the next two episodes, KBOO goes to the street to ask people in Portland what they think of this industry, how they define it, and whether they feel its impact and relevance in their own lives. And finally, we offer this family advisory. There may be some things you don't want your children to hear, like on how cruel reality is, and the discussion of prostitution. If you don't think this is appropriate for children, take action and keep them out of range. Catch the series on our website, kboo.fm, rather than on the car radio on the drive home. We want to tell you from the start, we are not advocating any position relative to this industry. We are just trying to shed light on businesses that, legal or illegal, seem to have a big impact on the life of our community. Some of KBOO's listeners work in this industry. Whether we like it or not, the sex industry is rooted in our culture. It's here to stay, and in fact, it's growing.
We'd like your feedback. At the end of this series, we'll do a full episode in which you get to speak your mind on this subject. Call the KBOO newsroom at 503-231-8187, and we'll hear you out and put you on the air. That's 503-231-8187.
So, there will be a lot to chew on. Listen to the next episode when we try to estimate the size and impact of the sex industry in Portland. And we'll interview people on the street about it.
This has been a special presentation of KBOO News. Tune in next time.